I declare a quorum present. Can you hear me all right now?
Yes.
Thank you. Could you please quiet down? We'd like to get the town meeting started. If you're standing, there's plenty of seats in the middle. So just walk your way through there, please. And we're going to keep seating people here until it's full. And once the floor is full, we'll go to the balcony. And if that gets filled, we'll go to the cafeteria. But let us begin our town meeting. Could you please hold the noise down? Please let us show our appreciation for the sacrifice of the men and women in our armed services who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan or are currently serving there, particularly those with Sudbury connections. In the past, we have listed those names on the view graph, but too many of them were missing from that view graph, so we've decided just to ask you to join me in wishing all of them well. Thank you. Permit me to read the words of Major Dennis Ford, who's a Sudbury resident who addressed this hall 3 years ago. At the time, he said the following. There are still many places in the world that you cannot debate open, that cannot debate openly and participate in the democratic process. Although we as a society may not all agree on every issue, we do have the freedom to debate openly and participate in democracy. My fellow Sudbury residents, you are the legislative body that will help shape the future here in Sudbury. Let me remind you to be civil in your debates and fair-minded in your votes, as well as cherish the tradition of the freedom we all share here in the United States, end quote. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. As you know, each year we have the pledge led at the annual town meeting by a student at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. We are honored this year that the individual selected is senior Emma Costello. Emma is the captain of the LS cross country team and the Alpine ski team. She is spirited, approachable, and dedicated are a few of the qualities that teammates recognize in her. She is the editor-in-chief of the LS Yearbook Dyad, which requires her and her staff to spend weeks and weeks producing this significant piece of memorabilia for her fellow seniors. Additionally, she is the LS coordinator for the American Cancer Society Relay for Life program. She is an artist and hopes to pursue this in college. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Thank you, Emma. The certified free cash, according to town accountant Barbara Chisholm, is now $488,595. I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the office's return of service, confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to all residents. I recognize Selectman Chairman Keller for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the office's return of service, notice, and the individual articles of the warrant.
So moved.
Is there a second? There is. All those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it is a unanimous vote. Thank you. At our annual town meeting, we introduce, particularly to newcomers, our town officials. As I read the name of each official, I will ask him or her to please raise your hand. To my immediate right is the town clerk, Rosemary Harvell. To her right is the assistant town clerk, Judy Newton. To my left at this first table, we have the three selectmen, John Drabinski. He's new at the job. Larry O'Brien. And the chair, Bill Keller. And sitting to Bill's left is our town manager, Maureen Valente. To my immediate left is town council, Paul Kenny. On the floor, we have the town accountant, Barbara Chisholm. And to her right is the director of assessing, Maureen Hafner. We have assistant town accountant, Robin, is it Porcella or Porcella? Porcella. At the viewgraph, we have, or walking to the viewgraph right now, we have Mary McCormick, the administrative assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Patty Golden is the supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones manages the town's legal department. And Mark Thompson at the viewgraph is our technology administrator. Finance Committee to my far left, Bob Jacobson, Jamie Gossels, Sheila Stewart, Jim Rayo, Bill Nealon Jr., Marty Raganese, Joan Carlton, Chairman Chuck Woodard, and Bob Stein. Also on the floor of town meeting, we have our assistant town manager, Wayne Walker, and our treasurer, collector, and finance director. Any other names for you, Andrea, just the three? Andrea Turkelson. Did I miss anybody? Wonderful. I've been asked to make some announcements. Volunteers are needed for the annual roadside cleanup, which will be held Saturday, April 24. Inside the back cover of your warrant is a sign-up form with instructions. We hope everyone will make time for the project. Also in the back of the warrant is a sign-up form to register your interest in serving on the town board or committee. Please consider how you might lend your talents to town government. Some committee memberships do not require a great deal of time, but all provide valuable contributions. Coffee and refreshments tonight are being served by the Ellis Culinary Arts Department. The Sudbury Women's Club is celebrating their centennial anniversary April 11th, 2 to 4, at Ames Hall at the Congregational Church. There will be refreshments and music, and everyone is welcome. Everyone is also welcomed to invite to see the 15th celebration art by the talented LS students. It's called Celebrate Art, and it's in the hallway where you checked in. So during a lull in the annual town meeting, you can stop by. Fire Chief McLean reminds you that there are two exits to the rear of both the floor and the balcony, as well as in front through the stage. If you come through this way, you'll just have to cross over to the other side, but feel free to use either staircase in the event of emergency. In the cafeteria, likewise, there are two exits in front and two in the rear. Although Chief McLean didn't mention it, I thought it would be important for me to mention the safety requirement that there are bathrooms located across the hall from the auditorium and also from the cafeteria. There are materials on the table where you entered about various warrant articles. There are also extra warrants in case you forgot one that was mailed to your home. I usually ask if our state senators are present, Jamie Eldridge and Susan Fargo. And I will also ask, I think I did see our state rep, Tom Conroy, and I believe this would be an appropriate time for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, and welcome, everyone. My name is Tom Conroy. I'm the state rep for Lincoln, Sudbury, and Whalen. I am here before you tonight to commemorate two great public servants and citizens here in Sudbury. The first has served for the past 12 years on the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School School Committee. He is known to many of you here. I'm sure he has been a dedicated and committed individual who cares deeply and passionately about the students at LS and has served that committee ably and very responsibly and perhaps very vocally over the course of the past 12 years. And I am here to represent the Massachusetts House of Representatives and commend him for his public service over the course of the past 12 years and to wish him best of fortune in all of his future endeavors. I thank Jack Ryan. Has been a great citizen of this town and a communitarian. And he, although he cannot He is not here tonight. I think that's my understanding. I was wondering if his wife, Barbara, is here to accept this citation from the Massachusetts House. Is Barbara around? Yes, she is. Jack really is a true gentleman and brings a lot of legal expertise to everything that he does. And I hope, Barbara, if you can pass along that my wishes are that this is just a pause in his service to the community, and I hope he returns to great citizenship in the future. I also want to, on behalf of my colleagues in the House, give great thanks and commendation to Bill Keller, who has served for the past 6 years on the Board of Selectmen, very ably, very responsibly, dutifully. I think he brings a great grounding to decision-making that I've witnessed on the Board of Selectmen and has really been a dedicated public servant in a lot of different ways. He served previously on the Planning Board and on the Board of Assessors. I think his total service to the town has been at least 15 years. And I just want to say thank you, Bill, and again, on behalf of the Massachusetts House of Representatives, we wish you best of luck in the future, and again, from personally, on my behalf, I hope this is just a mere pause and that you continue to serve, and I'm sure you will, in a variety of capacities, the town of Sudbury and all of its citizens. So thank you.
Effort to get through the budget on the first night, we, believe it or not, have shortened the preliminaries. I will now recognize Selectman O'Brien for a resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during the past year. Mr. O'Brien will not read all the various committees that each decedent has served on, but they will be on the view graph for your viewing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who gave of their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us, now therefore be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of those persons and recognize their service and dedication to our community. Anne Marie Arnold, John Jack Balvin, Daniel Butner, Thomas Depcher, Rebecca Fairbank, Marion Garrigan, Marjorie Gibson, Elizabeth Hope, Hans Lopater, John Lynch, George McQueen, Muriel Plonko, Kenneth Ritchie, Betty Rothman, Marguerite Sabella, Joseph Scamone, Anita Simon, Janet Smith, Mary Williams. And be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury and town meeting assembled record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their contributions to our community.
Thank you. For many years, it has been a tradition at the annual town meeting to honor one citizen who's performed valuable service for the town by asking him or her to make the motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we recognize Parker L. Coddington. Parker moved to Sudbury 34 years ago. He has been on the Conservation Commission from 1993 to 97 and again since 2000. He was on the Strategic Planning Committee from 1998 to 2002, the Land Use Priorities Committee from 1999 to 2004, and the Sewer Assessment Technical Committee since 1999. And if you happen to be a reader of the Boston Globe, I'm sure each day you check the letters to the editor to see if Parker has written yet another cogent one. It is my personal privilege to introduce Parker L. Coddington.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you all. I do and have been suffering for a long time from senile, I should say post-senile arthritis, but I can still move, and so I do move to accept the report. Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2009 town report, or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found. I hope there is a second.
Is there a second? There is. Finance Committee takes no position, I assume? And the selectmen are in favor? Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 1? Seeing no one, all in favor, raise your cards. All opposed? It is unanimous. Before we get into Article 2, I'd like to review some procedural matters with you. I hope everyone has reviewed the warrant and familiarized himself or herself with the summary of basic town meeting procedures and the motion primer in the beginning of your warrant on pages Roman numeral 2 and Roman numeral 5. This is a reminder, it's a good time to look in your pocket or pocketbook to make sure that your cell phone is off. If you wish to speak and you're recognized, please give your name and address clearly each time you speak in order to assure a clear audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your card. Do not stand at the microphone. I will be able to see you in your seat. If you are sitting near a standing mic and I recognize you, you may go there to speak. Otherwise, wait for a runner to bring you a handheld mic. The mic will definitely be on. There's absolutely no need to blow into it. Just speak, beginning with your name and address. We are using Troop 63 Boy Scouts, led by Scoutmaster Fred Rust. These runners will again be used because of the long aisles that make it very difficult for a voter in the middle to get up to speak at a standing mic. Our Boy Scout runners tonight are Dave Karzanowski. Where are you, Dave? Right there. Vic Gopal. Vic, are you here? Way in the back. Got it. Thank you, Vic. Jim Freeman. Okay. And Leif Skromstad. You were here last year. Thank you all very much for helping us out. In the cafeteria, if we are still using it, and Fred, who's in the cafeteria, we still have lots of seats in the balcony, so if you have anyone there, you can send them down here until we fill it up. All motions of substance, including main motions and motions to amend, must be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you have to give a copy to the folks at the ViewGraph so they can show the hall. When you make a motion or an amendment, you must do so when you're first recognized and not at the end or the middle of a statement or a question. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town and regional school employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows at the back, to my left and right, at the back of the hall. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern, that is of concern to you, not to bolt the hall after the vote is taken. You will be showing your neighbors a courtesy by listening to their articles as they have listened to yours. Folks in the cafeteria, you'll be able to address the hall from there as well and see and hear what's happening here, and we can see and hear what's happening there. Please be reminded that if you present or speak on articles, the bylaw states that presenters will speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes. Kindly plan accordingly, as requests to exceed these limits are not granted freely. Having said that, please keep in mind that President Abraham Lincoln, in his 1863 Gettysburg Address, delivered it in 2 minutes. The 10 and 5 minute limits do not require you to speak for 10 or 5 minutes. It's just an upper limit. Unless you move in the, if you are a presenter or moving an article and making a motion, unless you move in the words of the article as printed in the warrant, every presenter must tell the hall of any word changes in the motion and how they differ from the words that the voters saw in the warrant. Vote counting takes considerably longer in this auditorium because of the very long rows with no aisle breaks. So please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you are sure that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless the standing vote is obvious from the stage, I will call for a head count by the tellers. If you wish to vote on an article and are at home watching these proceedings on cable TV, I strongly suggest you leave well before the discussion begins so you have adequate time to park, check in at the tables inside the side doors, and find your way to the auditorium or cafeteria, because the doors will be locked for the vote, and you folks will not be allowed in and hence will not be allowed to vote unless you're already in a seat. It would be unfortunate if voters cut it too close and got shut out of the vote. If you look in the warrant, you will see the percentage vote required for passage of an article. It's set forth next to each article. A brief comment and order on reconsideration, given that it was requested twice by the losing party at a recent annual town meeting. Both requests for reconsideration lost overwhelmingly on the reconsideration vote, because there is a long tradition in Sudbury of only granting reconsideration in very limited circumstances, namely, when there was such misstatement of fact that enough voters would have voted differently on the original article so as to change the result of that vote. In the 40 years I have lived in town, reconsideration has succeeded less than a handful of times. There are many town meeting attendees who vote in favor of an article that failed, but when it's brought up for reconsideration, vote against reconsideration, because those folks have had their day in court, so to speak. Please, there shall be no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against speakers before, during, or after presentations. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether they're directed at a voter, a speaker, or town officials. Let me repeat that. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or a town official. If you do, you may lose your right to speak. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on every article. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. Let me quote President Lincoln, who said, in referring to the open town meeting, quote, "But in New England, in a New England town, the government is literally by the people governed, acting on each problem as they individually deem wise. No more perfect form of democracy exists," end quote. We should all cherish that democracy. I recognize the Chair of the Board of Selectmen, Bill Keller, for a state of the town address. This is to remind you that the 10-minute limitation on presenter of motions, as well as does not apply to this address or the address by the Finance Committee on the state of the financial condition of the town. Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. At this point in town meeting, the outgoing chairman usually offers a state of the town address. I stand before you to continue this tradition. These past few months have been arguably the most actively participated election and pre-town meeting period that Sudbury has seen in many years. As has happened before, and will no doubt happen in the future, some would say we are at a time when there appears to be a fork in the road, where some folks are feeling the need to reconsider where we are and question whether the decisions made before need to be reassessed, perhaps a new direction taken. Some might even say the recent election, voting in a new selectman, is evidence of that. But I say that the turning point happened almost 20 years ago. If we look back at Sudbury in the early 90s, we were a town without a consensus or clear leadership. Our boards and commissions and committees were often at odds with each other. The majority of them were anti-business and anti-development. Commercial zoning was restrictive and not responsive to the needs of the business community. In the period from 1990 to 2000, the town's population grew by 20%. School population grew by 50%. Over 1,000 acres of forest and farmland was sold and developed. In the same period, over 750 new single-family houses were built, bringing extraordinary demands on our school systems. Our very landscape was changing before our eyes. Our schools were overcrowded, and there was not enough recreational space. Individual neighborhoods competed with each other for amenities like walkways. It felt like the firing squad was always pointed inward, toward other members of our community, instead of having a process for setting and achieving goals that would make our community better. I am proud to say that I was a part of a group that said the process must change. We began our long-term master planning. Preservation of community character was paramount to residents as the town grew toward full build-out. Residents defined what they wanted Sudbury to look like. They wanted a more livable community with increased recreation, housing for all age groups, and thriving businesses. That process resulted in the adoption of our master plan, entitled Sustainable Sudbury. It has guided us since. As a member of the planning board, I helped introduce the current senior housing bylaws and wireless service bylaw, which provide significant revenue to the town while little need for municipal services. We changed restrictive zoning to give local businesses opportunities for growth and retention, including a significant overhaul of the Water Resource Protection District bylaw, essentially allowing existing businesses to grow in place. Major changes to the sign bylaw, allowing increases in the amount of signage businesses could have, and changes to the site plan bylaw, providing expedited permitting process. We worked to adopt the Community Preservation Act to preserve community character by purchasing beloved landscapes, preserving historic resources, and giving the town the resources to fund additional recreation opportunities, walkways, fields, even a town dock. We opened the door to lower-priced housing units using CPA funds, thereby providing a way for municipal employees, including teachers, to live in the community in which they worked. We rebuilt and expanded our schools, received 62% reimbursement from the state in the process, and are now on the downward slope of paying off those debts. In addition, we preserved the historic portion of the Goodnow Library while adding an expanded state-of-the-art facility to it. Our multi-million-dollar investments in DPW equipment, previously left outdoors, is now protected in the highway barn we built in conjunction with office space to support assorted town departments. Beyond investing in infrastructure, Sudbury became a leader in the Commonwealth working for senior tax relief, leading to the statewide senior circuit breaker program. Our groundbreaking and popular senior tax deferral program helps many seniors stay in Sudbury and became a model for a statewide program. More recently, with the Finance Committee's leadership, we have moved from near annual overrides to a financial plan and model that will provide a balance between financial and service level sustainability in most years. To that end, the selectmen drove the just completed collective bargaining with our town and SBS employee unions to include health care benefit changes in the three critical areas: plan design, greater employee contribution rates, and increased copayments. These will deliver multi-year savings and contribute to our sustainability. Moreover, we continue our efforts at sharing resources and expenses with neighboring communities where appropriate, and pursue regionalization opportunities to assist us in meeting our needs. But yes, the economic downturn, worst since the Great Depression, has impacted Sudbury. Residents, businesses, and employees alike, we all individually feel the effects, but we also feel it collectively with the reduction of state aid to our budget. If we were not seeing this reduction in state aid and key local receipts, we likely would have continued on the path developed by the FinCom of not needing an override this year. Later in this meeting, you will hear the latest revenue projections and revised recommendations relative to next year's budget. The past 15 years have seen scores of residents on boards and committees working together functionally towards common goals. This is something you rarely see in municipal government. These current board and committee members, volunteers, remember, are the most dedicated group of people I know. They are dedicated to making Sudbury the best place to live in the country, dedicated to providing its residents with superior services, dedicated to academic excellence, dedicated to working together to accomplish goals. Many of you, of whom I speak, are here tonight. For me, it has been an honor and a privilege working with you all. I thank you for all you do, helping Sudbury to become a wonderful community that it is, and it will continue to do so. This town isn't broken and doesn't need a complete overhaul, as some have suggested. But we are obligated to bear in mind that the issues we face are complex and multifaceted. We must recognize that there are no simple soundbite solutions, as alluring as they may sound. For we live in the real world, where what is needed is for us to continue our past practices of thoughtful discussion, goal setting, and making progress toward these goals. The challenge is out there, and I know that the many volunteers and leaders in this town will meet these challenges head on and continue to accomplish great things. A sustainable Sudbury will endure. Thank you.
I understand that the Finance Committee will wait until the main budget article, Article 4, to make its statement on the town's financial condition. So we are on to the consent calendar. Please look to pages Roman numeral 3 and Roman numeral 4 in your warrant. I will call out the numbers of the articles one by one. If any voter has doubt about passing any motions or wishes an explanation on any subject on the consent calendar, the voter should stand and say the word "hold" in a very loud voice when that number is called. I will then inquire as to whether the request for hold is for a question or for debate. If the purpose of the request was merely to ask a question, an attempt to obtain a satisfactory answer will be made, and if that occurs, the article will remain on the consent calendar absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of the request was to hold the article for debate, the article will be removed from the consent calendar and restored to its original place in the warrant to be brought up and debated and voted in the usual way. No voter should hesitate to exercise the right to remove matters from the consent calendar. It is the view of the voters as to the need for debate that is supreme, not that of town officials who put together the consent calendar. Having said that, it is hoped that voters will remove articles from the consent calendar only in cases of genuine concern. In past years, it has occasionally happened that articles were removed from the consent calendar and, when reached in the normal course, passed unanimously without debate, thus indicating that the initial removal request was perhaps not fully considered before being exercised. I'm now going to slowly read each article by number. I won't read what the content is because you have that in your warrant in front of you. If you wish it to be held, just yell out the words, hold, and then give me your name and address for the record, and I will ask you whether it's for a question or for debate. Article 11. Article 12. Article 13. Article 16. Could you just stand for your name, address for the record, and tell us whether it's for debate or a question? Thank you. 16 will be removed from the consent calendar. Article 17. Stand, please. Name and address for the record. For debate or for a question? 17 will be removed from the consent calendar. 22. Could we have your name and address for the record, please? What is your question, sir? Town Council, please.
Mr. Moderator, the items that are in that are being requested to be exempted from Chapter 30B have to do with the cell towers that are in town. Found it to be a the bidding that has gone on. Actually, there are requests for proposals. All of these sites are now coming up for renewal. We're not really getting new sites. And it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to make them go out on a request for proposals and ask them to tear down the towers so someone else can put one up, or the infighting that might be involved with there may be three or four participants on the tower. And it's in the best interest of the town to take and put together and negotiate a long-term lease, which we may also sell off to others at a substantial profit for the town. So the only reason is because these towers are really there. If they were rent, we've also included new towers if they come, but we haven't had any for, I would say, 10 years or so. So all of the wireless providers seem to be taken care of on the towers, and it doesn't. We believe that it will cause us to be put at a disadvantage if we have to take in the RFP rather than being able to negotiate terms on, that we would like.
RFP is request for proposal. RFP is RFP is a request for proposal. Mr. Coe, does that answer your question?
I'm not sure. I guess what's being proposed here is that we don't think the bidding process is necessary. Is that it? Is that necessarily? I mean, by what reasoning is it better for the town? Maybe it is. I don't have any knowledge of it that says that it isn't. But it just seems like a priori that doing away with the bidding process may or may not be in the interest of the town.
The contracts that have been bid, if you want to call it, it's a little different than bidding. It's the bidding statute, but it's under a request for proposals, have resulted in our having to accept what they submit. We believe that we can negotiate better terms, lengthier terms, and that it's until and we can get more money for the leases, to be perfectly honest with you, which is the overriding reason. We think that we are put in a better position, the town is put in a better position by allowing that kind of negotiations rather than the bidding. The bidding takes, or the request for proposal takes a substantial amount of time, and as I indicated before, some of these towers are already up. It's my opinion anyway that we are put in a stronger position by negotiating with the individual parties rather than having them come in and tell us who is going to give the best price.
Thank you. Mr. Coe? Okay. So 22 remains on the consent calendar. 23. That remains on the consent calendar. 26. Please stand and give your name and address, please.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street, for a question. What is a reproduction of a Revolutionary War stone?
The question is, what is the reproduction of a Revolutionary War cellar?
Stone. Well, is this going to be a gravestone like the stones are there? Is it going to be a piece of plastic?
Okay, do we have someone who can answer that question? Can you rise and can the scout give you a mic, please? Right there. You can stay right there.
Thank you. Liz Radowski, and I'm on the Historical Commission, and I've been working on this project. What we are trying here is to get the stones that are in pieces, get them put back together, and doing that on the site at the cemetery is very difficult with the weather. What we'd like to be able to do, and in order to do it, we have to have permission from the state to do it, and we need to pass this article from the state in order to complete that project. And no, they will not be made of plastic. They are made of the pieces of the stones that we have and the proper materials that are recognized to repair them with.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I take that, Ms. Coe, that means that this article is going to stay on the consent calendar as far as you're concerned? Okay. 26 remains. 28. Well, let's have a new one. This gentleman on the aisle.
For a question, Mr. Moderator, Robert Abrams, 24 Goodman's Hill Road. Under this article, there are five different warrant articles from five different prior town meetings, which add up to exactly the $90,000 that is proposed to be spent here. What I'd like to know is, since it's unlikely that $90,000 would have been an exact figure, exactly how much unexpended funds are there under those five articles? It's a total amount available.
Thank you. Can someone give that answer?
I don't believe we have that information handy. I'm looking at the finance director to see if she has that at this point, or the town accountant. We'll take a quick look at that.
I tell you what, while they're doing that, Mr. Abrams, Mr. Coe.
I have a different but related question. I'm having trouble seeing what the words of the article are. The article itself is rather vaguely phrased, and the only substantive items are part of the treasurer's report, not part of the article itself. And I think this previous gentleman's question is, how did the $90,000 get to be that? And it appears to be pretty much the sum of the numbers in the treasurer's report. But there's nothing in the article that even references the treasurer's report. So as far as I can see, the article is practically open-ended and doesn't depend on the numbers in the treasurer's report or those particular items in any way.
Thank you, Mr. Coe. We'll try to get an answer to both questions. But while we're waiting for the answer, I'd like to move on and see what other issues we have with other consent calendar items. Article 29. Yes.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. There is, it mentions that 29 is contingent on what happens to 28. And there was one town meeting some time back where we didn't hold the second one and then couldn't vote on it.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the end of that.
Well, I vaguely recall a town meeting where we held one article and then there was a dependent article after it, and then we found that we had passed the dependent article by not holding it.
And how does Article 29 depend on Article 28? Hang on. Town manager, please.
Again, this was an article that was approved at a prior town meeting for $90,000 to raise this sum by borrowing. At the time, we had several borrowings coming up ahead of us, and we assumed we could simply put this with it so that the fairly costly borrowing costs as a portion of what the total sum principal's borrowing would be spread across a larger amount. By itself, it doesn't make good economic sense to incur borrowing costs for this $90,000, but should you not approve this article transferring the unused capital balances, we still need that borrowing in the second article. Ms. Coe is correct that we need the first one to pass so that then we can rescind this. Should it not pass, we don't want it rescinded.
So what my objective here is to make sure that we can vote on this if we have to.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to hold on 28 and 29 and jump down to 37. Yes, stand, please.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Hold for debate.
Okay, 37 is off. 38. Yes, can you stand, please? Can we get a mic over there, please?
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. I'll hold for a question.
What is your question, please?
The question is that this is reversion for... Can you hear?
Yes, now I can.
Yeah. This is reversion of CPA funds. This has not previously come up before town meeting. Why is this particular set coming up now?
Do we have someone from CPC who wishes to answer this question?
Chris Morley, the chairman of the CPC. Community Preservation Committee.
A little louder, please.
Sorry.
It's
all right. Closer. That'll
yes.
Do it. Chris Morley, chairman of the CPC, the Community Preservation Committee. These are projects that are finished and completed, and finally we went through and looked for the little bits hanging off in accounting, and they go back into the main CPC fund. So this is really just an accounting article.
So,
is that, where's Pat?
So Article 22 from 2007 town meeting is considered to be complete. That's one of the ones listed.
If it's listed, it is.
Okay, and Article 24 of 2007 town meeting with $27,000 outstanding is not considered to be complete.
Pardon?
Article 24 of 2007 town meeting with $27,000 in funds outstanding is not considered to be complete.
Off the top of my head, I don't know what that is, but if okay. It's not on this list, it's not considered complete.
Okay, that's the centerline survey wetlands delineation for the Bruce Freeman. And those funds all, 22, 23, and 24 from 2007, the funds all expire at the end of fiscal year 10. So would that money then return to the CPC regardless at the end of fiscal year 10,
yes.
Whether we voted this or not?
All CPA money can only be spent in CPA. So it never goes to the town budget or the town trough or any other town account. It's CPA money.
But it doesn't need to be reverted. It comes back to the CP Community Preservation Commission.
I assume we would probably have to do an article like this in the future.
Okay. So even though the funds Can't it be expended after the end of fiscal year 10? We need an article like this to revert them.
I don't really know the answer for sure.
Okay.
I mean, that's a legal and accounting issue.
Okay, well.
I don't know why it's not on here, but I know it's not on here from the town accountants.
Well, no further question, then. I'm not holding for debate.
I'm sorry?
No further questions. I'm not holding for debate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then we're going to keep 38 on the consent calendar. Town manager or Andrea, do you have an answer on 28? Andrea Turkelson, finance director.
At the present time, the articles listed.
Andrea, a little closer.
At the present time, the articles listed for the five previous town meetings for capital have a combined total available of $202,069. When we move and vote for a capital article, the money stays there for that purpose until it's spent or, in this case, rescinded later. We have some articles, we have some projects from those previous articles that, similar to the one we were just talking about for CPA, have been completed and did not require all of the funds. In other cases, there might be, something that was not needed to purchase in the end. So anytime we have that, we need to come back to town meeting and either close that money out or, in this case, ask to reappropriate for a similar purpose. So we have a combined $202,000. We need $90,000 to fund the feasibility study. And so we have chosen monies from those various articles to get up to that level. The remaining $112,000 might still be in progress. It sometimes takes a number of months and so forth to complete a project. So not all of the money that is still there is going to be closed out at some point.
Thank you. Mr. Abrams, did that answer your question?
No.
Mike?
Oh, Mr. Moderator.
Could you rephrase the question again, please?
Well, what I heard is that maybe there is more money up to $202,069, but that maybe some of these projects aren't completely done yet. So if they're not completely done yet, then it's not a finite amount of money, and I would want to have debate on that. If they are completely done, then my question becomes, can the town meeting, under this article, take the additional $112,000 and also, under this article, remit it to the town treasury, to the general fund?
Town council, please.
Mr. Moderator, the amount of money that can be taken out of these other articles is limited to the amount that's set forth in the warrant, which is, I believe, $90,000. So you couldn't, under this article, it would be outside the four corners of the article to do so.
Thank you.
Then I'd like to hold it for debate.
Thank you. 28 is off the consent calendar. I assume, town manager, that you wish to take 29 off the consent calendar, since we don't know if 28 will pass.
That's correct, Mr. Moderator.
29 will be removed from the consent calendar. How'd we do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 off. That was 29. Okay. Mr. Keller, would you kindly move to take Articles 11, 12, 13, 22, 23, 26, and 38 out of order and consider them together at this time?
I gladly so move.
Is there a gladly second? There is. The Finance Committee wish to be heard? No. Selectmen wish to be heard? No. This requires a 4/5 vote that need not be counted unless it's very, very close. All those in favor of the motion made by Mr. Keller signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, It is one against. Everyone else is in the affirmative. Mr. Keller, would you also gladly move in the words of the consent calendar motions as printed on page Roman numeral 4 in the warrant for the following articles, 11, 12, 13, 22, 23, 26, and 38?
Yes, so moved.
Is there a second? There is. Finance Committee and Selectmen, I take it, do not wish to be heard. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it is unanimous. We will move on to Article 2. Mr. O'Brien for a motion.
Move to indefinitely postpone, Mr. Moderator.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. O'Brien.
The town has no budget adjustments to make at this time.
That's easy. Jim Rayo for the FinCom. I take it you appreciate the indefinite postponement.
Yes, we do.
Wonderful. Anybody wish to be heard on the IP motion? I see no one. All those in favor, raise your cards. Those opposed, that is also unanimous. Thank you. Article 3, Mr. O'Brien, for a motion.
Move in the words of the article, Mr. Moderator.
No. Here. Mr. O'Brien?
Sorry, Mr. Moderator, I have it here. Move to appropriate the sum of $50,000 to be added to the stabilization fund established under Article 12 of the October 7, 1982 special town meeting, pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 40, Section 5B, said sum to be raised by taxation. Said amount voted hereunder is contingent upon passage of a ballot question for that purpose at a special town election.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien, I take it the difference between the warrant article and the motion you just made is that the latter contains the language, said amount voted hereunder is contingent upon passage of ballot question for that purpose of a special town election.
There will be no appropriation made to the budget, to the non-override budget, if that is what passes town meeting. In the event that an override budget passes town meeting and succeeds at the polls, part of the override amount would be a $50,000 appropriation to the stabilization fund, again, only in the event that an override passes town meeting and the ballot.
Thank you. Do you have an additional presentation to make?
No, Mr. Moderator.
Okay. Finance Committee, Mr. Rayo?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 3.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 3? Yes, sir.
Robert Abrams, 24 Goodman's Hill Road. I'm curious how much money we have in the stabilization fund now and why...
The very question I asked. $1,895,139.
And if it's a good idea to put $50,000 into the stabilization fund, why isn't it a good idea in the general budget, but that we should have an override to put $50,000 into the stabilization fund?
Chairman of the Finance Committee, Chuck Woodard, to answer.
I think we thought that there would not be sufficient funds available to put money into the stabilization fund in the event that an override did not pass.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 3? Yes, sir. Could you stand up? Can we get this gentleman a mic? To your right. You come right in front. Just you can hand it right to him. Thank you.
Chuck McAvoy, 11 Douglas Drive. I just wanted to find out what the target amount is that we're trying to achieve in the stabilization fund going forward, if there is one.
Thank you. Yes. Mr. Woodard.
The selectman's target is 5% of our operating budget, and our accountants, I believe, recommend to most municipalities, certainly those with AAA ratings like Sudbury, that we have 5 to 10% in total cash reserves, including the stabilization fund. And the town of Sudbury historically and today operates with something on the order of 2 to 3%. So with budgets tight, we haven't been able to put much into it. We thought with an override, we might make a small additional contribution this year.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 3? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It requires a two-thirds vote. There are only a handful of people opposed. It gets well more than the two-thirds. It has passed. We'll now move on to Article 4. Was this on the consent calendar also? There is occasionally some confusion about the budget. I would commend to you reading the bottom of page Roman numeral 2 and the top of Roman numeral 3 in your warrant. The tradition in Sudbury is to first take from the Finance Committee proposing a budget that would be limited to the amount which would be required to finance the Finance Committee's budget proposal. This limiting motion will seek a vote of the hall as to the overall limit on the budget. A vote in favor of the motion will not mean that town meeting has voted on a particular distribution of the total amount set forth in the warrant, but it will establish the upper limit of our budget for fiscal year 2011. Once we vote on the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line items 100 through 1,000 in the handout and ask if anyone has a motion to amend or a question. Again, all this is written on page Roman numeral 2 at the bottom and the top of Roman numeral page 3 in the warrant. So we will first discuss and vote on the limiting motion. I recognize either Jim Rayo or Chuck Woodard for the motion, the limiting motion, for the first part of Article 4.
Move that the amount appropriated under the FY11 budget override budget not exceed the sum of $78,748,358.
So we will call, is it fair to call this the limiting motion for a budget override?
Yes.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. Who's going to make the presentation? Chair of the Finance Committee, Chuck Woodard, will give a presentation. I've asked him at the same time that he makes his presentation on the budget to give us his state of the union, the state of the town financial condition. Anybody want to vote on the budget?
Is that okay? Good evening. My name is Chuck Woodard, and I am chairman of the Sudbury Finance Committee. First of all, I would like to announce that based upon recent positive information regarding the likely level of state aid, we are reducing the assumed amount of state aid reductions expected for next year by $511,000 and reducing the proposed override by the same amount as well as the $42,000 surplus shown in the warrant to a new override request of $1,199,725. Revised budget proposals reflecting this change are included in the handout you received when you checked in this evening. In order to publish the warrant on time for issuance to the taxpayers, the budget has to be finalized by the second week in February. At that time, our assumption of a 7.5% reduction in state aid was considered reasonable but a little optimistic. Based upon a recently released detailed budget proposal from the Senate Ways and Means Committee for next year, together with advice from Representative Conroy, who sits on the House Ways and Means Committee, we've concluded that a 5% projected reduction that takes into account the one-time nature of federal stimulus dollars last year can now be reasonably expected. We waited until the proverbial last minute to make revisions to ensure that we had the most up-to-date information. The new figures that you're looking at were developed last Thursday evening and voted on by the Selectmen and the Finance Committee tonight prior to the start of town meeting. Since the FinCom's paradigm for this year's override budget request was previously communicated to be the sum of the amount necessary to make up for lost revenue from last year, including reduced state aid, the stabilization fund contribution we talked about a few minutes ago, and the amount needed to fund a 2.75% increase in the appropriated operating budget, a projected improvement in state aid would necessarily mean a lower override. Bottom line, the lesser reduction in expected state aid results in a lower proposed tax increase, dollar for dollar. And now I'd like to proceed to my main remarks. The budget decision we're going to make tonight is critically important to the quality of our schools and town services, so it is equally important that your decision be made with the full facts available. The Finance Committee is responsible for reviewing the town and school budgets and making recommendations on spending requests to town meeting. While we do not have the authority to dictate to any of the cost centers how they spend their money, the act of recommending or not gives us some influence on your behalf over the direction and amount of town spending. Who are we? We're residents, we're taxpayers, and we're all volunteers. We're comprised of five seniors over the age of 60 and four members with children in the Sudbury schools. We have a blend of the experienced as well as the fresh look at things, as three members have only been on the committee for 2 years. The budget is particularly tight this year because our non-property tax sources of revenue have declined in this weak but slowly recovering economy. State aid to the town and Sudbury Public Schools is now projected to be 5% below fiscal year 10 levels, down $129,000. Local receipts, including excise taxes, together with the abatement surplus, are expected to be down $717,000. And Lincoln Sudbury is likewise projected to see a 5% reduction in state aid and a reduction in free cash available to offset Sudbury's contribution to the school, both totaling $552,000. The resulting total revenue loss to Sudbury available to cover the budget is projected to be $1.4 million. The Finance Committee is required by law to recommend a non-override budget. For fiscal year 11, we are recommending a non-override budget of $77.5 million, which will mean a tax increase of 2.24% or $235 for the average existing home assessment, $242 if you include the incremental CPA surcharge, and a total increase in taxes of $1.9 million, including new growth and commercial property taxes, which is 2.93% over fiscal year 10. Because of the loss of non-property tax revenues, three-quarters of the taxes collected under this budget will be used to replace the loss of those revenues with a balance available to cover just a 1.12% increase in town and school operating costs. 1.12% is not enough to cover increases in the cost of employee health insurance, agreed-upon pay raises in collective bargaining agreements, increases in transportation costs, etc. So a non-override budget will require layoffs of school and town personnel. Our labor unions agreed to meaningful concessions in pay and benefits in the 2009 contracts, but those are not enough to live within a 1.12% budget. After 2 years of very tight budgets and a headcount reduction of 46 town and school-wide, we are also recommending an override budget that will provide the additional money to fund a 2.75% increase in the operating budgets net of direct offsets so that layoffs can be minimized. The override budget amounts to $78.7 million, which will mean a tax increase of 4.06% or $426 for the average existing home assessment, $439 if you include the incremental CPA surcharge, and a total increase in taxes of $3.1 million, including new growth and commercial property taxes, which is 4.76% over fiscal year 10. $1.4 million of the tax increase will be used to replace the loss of revenues, just as with a non-override budget. $58,500 will be used to fund a contribution to the Town Stabilization Fund and the Lincoln Subway Stabilization Fund. And $1.7 million will be used to fund a 2.75% increase in the operating budgets net of direct offsets. This compares to increases in those appropriated budgets of less than 2% in each of the last 2 years, and would result in a 3-year compounded annual growth rate in budgeted appropriations of 1.83%. Why are real estate taxes so high? Sudbury has one of the highest levels of households with school-aged children in the state, so we have a much higher demand for education relative to other communities our size. We have more kids to educate for a community our size, so that the amount that each household must pay for the cost of schools is larger. That said, if you measure our spending on the schools on a per-student basis, and you measure our spending on town services on a per-household basis, you find that our costs are in line with and often lower than similar Metro West communities. This slide shows the K-8 system cost per student compared to other K-8 and K-6 school systems, and we are, in Sudbury, one of the lowest-cost schools. Here are the high school costs per student compared to other Metro West regional high schools. In this case, we're at the median. And here are the town operating costs, excluding the schools, per household. We are once again one of the lowest cost providers. So let me summarize why we are recommending an override budget. First, we believe our costs are in line with or lower than similar Metro West communities. Second, the increase in the appropriated budget in each of the last 2 years, as I mentioned earlier, has been less than 2%, and with this proposed 2.75% increase, the 3-year compounded annual growth rate is still only 1.83%. Third, labor is over 77% of the budget, so reducing headcount is the primary means to balance a tight budget because most of our employees are covered by collective bargaining agreements. Since these collective bargaining agreements require that layoffs be done based on seniority, the most junior and lesser paid employees would have to be let go first, thereby requiring even greater headcount reductions to meet a specified budget reduction dollar amount. Of the 23% of costs at the schools, only 5 to 7% is really discretionary because the remaining costs include such items as special education, transportation, and utilities. The result, a headcount reduction of 46 over the last 2 years across both school systems in the town, and so we are recommending against balancing next year's budget with more layoffs. Lastly, and more importantly, or very importantly, our employees have made significant concessions and have stepped forward to share the burden of these tight budgets. Total projected cost reductions from the new labor contracts over the 3 fiscal years ending in 2012 amount to $5.7 million, or an average of $1.9 million per year, when compared to the budgets that would have resulted from the spending growth limit set by the FinCom before the recession began. As you consider this override recommendation, I think it's reasonable to ask, what are we doing to push back on the growth in the budget? First, we are publicizing key budget information, particularly the employee compensation component, which is 70 to 80% of the total, so that there is more public awareness of these costs and hopefully more public pressure to slow down its growth. Some of the detailed operating information that the Finance Committee reviews has been included in this year's warrant so that you may see some of what we see. Second, we initiated a maximum spending growth limit as a guideline for budget growth. The Finance Committee has publicly stated that we would vote against any budget that exceeded that limit. The objective was to move the onus for determining the rate of growth in spending from the taxpayer in an up or down town meeting vote to cost center management and the labor unions. At a minimum, any new labor contract would have to fit within the announced spending growth limit and hopefully come in below that threshold. Consequently, some of the burden of determining the level of layoffs would be shifted from the taxpayer to management and the labor unions. As it has turned out, the economy has had a greater impact on the budget than any spending growth limit of our making. Nevertheless, this concept is important and needs to remain if we are to avoid the possibility of a return to the higher percentage growth budgets of 3 to 4 years ago. Third, we have insisted that each cost center get the same percentage budget increase. Absent major changes in circumstances, such as a significant change in student population, all cost centers budgets should be growing at roughly the same rate. This is logical given that they are all labor-intensive services with 70 to 80% of their costs in compensation. Limiting each cost center to the same percentage increase discourages overly generous labor contracts because any cost center with a larger contract settlement will have less money to spend on new hires, technology, classroom materials, etc. It encourages each cost center to find ways to operate more efficiently by moving the budget away from a cost-plus approach, and it avoids the otherwise unfortunate result that one cost center might receive a bigger piece of the pie over time without any change in their relative contribution to town services. To conclude, the key override question for you tonight is whether you are willing to make up for the loss of non-property tax revenues and provide the additional money to maintain services at roughly their current level. The Finance Committee is recommending a non-override budget of $77,537,218 and an override budget of $78,748,358. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien, for the Selectmen.
Selectmen support the motion.
The limiting motion on the override amount?
Yes.
Okay. We will now hear from the schools and the town departments, starting with Superintendent John Brackett for K through 8 School Committee.
Good evening. I will not give my Gettysburg address, but Mr. Woodard has done a great job of outlining the conditions that we're facing. And I just wanted to spend a few minutes tonight and try to put this in context as it applies to Sudbury Public Schools, the K-8 system. One of the things going into this budget year is that we certainly recognize the economic times that we're all facing. And many of the decisions that have had to be made certainly reflect that. However, as we move forward, I just wanted to point out that despite what some of the perceptions might have been in the past, things really did change for us at Sudbury Public Schools in FY09. The budget, if you can see from this chart, the budget grew only 1.28 in FY09, and that's when we had to reduce our headcount or our staffing by over 22 FTEs. And we cut services dramatically that year. And then following it through to FY10, which is the current year, we again grew at only 1.26%, a small amount on a $34 million budget. How did we do it? Well, first of all, as Mr. Woodard said, our employees stepped up and took a very strong position in trying to and helping to understand that we could not live the status quo and make this operation sustainable. They stepped up and said, we want to be part of the solution, and they wanted to address the sustainability. And they also understood that everybody in the room that was negotiating this contract agreed that our students couldn't wait for the economy to get better in order to benefit from it. They did this They did this, and the result of our bargaining will save about $4.1 million over the 3 years of the contract, and that's over the status quo. If we had done nothing and just kind of continued along the way with the regular increases in salaries and the increases in benefits, we would be talking tonight about a nearly $2 million deficit as opposed to a $670,000 deficit. In addition, we continue to work to find ways to save money, to cut costs, to bring greater efficiencies to our operation. It's only in our best interest to do this. And so we continue to do this. And as you can see from this slide, there are a number of things that we have done over this course of the last couple of years. We've worked closely with the town on a project called CORE to bring groups together to see if there are ways that we could bring efficiencies in the operations. We're working now with Lincoln, LS, and Wayland on something that's called the G4, looking again all through our systems for ways to bring greater efficiencies to our operation. We also have done things like outsource special ed transportation that saves a considerable amount and will continue to save that amount over the course of the year. And there are a number of those, and this is only an assortment of them. I want to point out, too, the lower one where we were able to add full-day kindergarten. It wasn't a cost savings, but we were able to add that very valuable program to our system and to offer that to our community without additional cost to the budget. To put this in perspective, and you've seen this slide already, but we spend virtually less than most of our peer districts. But what I wanted to remind you is that while spending less, and I'm bragging, so take that for what it's worth, because I'm very proud of our students and our staff, but we outperform them. We are one of the top performing districts in the state. And I just wanted to highlight a few things just this year in FY09 from the MCAS results, that Loring, for example, was fifth in the state in fourth grade math. Curtis, fifth in the state in seventh grade math. Nixon, ninth in the state in third grade math. Haynes, sixth in the state. And there is a new metric out called Growth Index. And every one of our schools is identified as a high-achieving, high-growth school. And that is by the Department of Education. So, things certainly have changed since FY09 when we cut our budgets, and we also cut 22 people out of our staff. We also lowered our FTE, or our staff levels this year, and we're projecting to do that next year as well. Yes, enrollment is down, but there's also been a shift in our Either that's somebody's phone or my 5 minutes has run. Let's go with the phone.
John, it's the latter. Give me an idea of how much longer you need.
I have about 5 minutes. 4 minutes? 3 minutes. I'll take I get the hook.
Hang on, John. Does the hall wish to grant Superintendent Brackett another 3 or 4 minutes to finish up? All those in favor?
Thank you.
All those opposed? Please continue.
Thank you very much.
But I'll remember this next year.
I know. Yeah. I'll go on the day when the budget's not being discussed. One of the things that we're also facing is that we have a situation at our middle school where our enrollments today are very, very high. This chart tries to show what's happening at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And the number of classes that are over guidelines, which is 24, but also showing the number of sections in each of our classes that are over 30, and that is already today. Our enrollment is projected to be up next year at the middle school. We had intended to shift some staff there, but clearly under some of the budget constraints, that may not happen. So as we go into this year, we are planning for two budgets. We thought we had positioned ourselves very well for a non-override budget, and then you heard about this, what has happened to the revenue. So you'll decide tonight whether we move forward with a 1%, 1.12, or possibly a 2.75. If it is the non-override budget, we will be facing a deficit of about $669,000, a little over that. That's what we're going to be facing. It gives us only $383,000 more than we had this year. How will we do that? We have a plan, and the plan has taken a while to put together. We don't like it, but it's the best we could come up with, given that there was not much good choices to make. We started with the non-personnel, and you can see the note, the cuts here in technology and supplies, but that still left over $400,000 or nearly $400,000 to cut. So that meant staff. And if you remember that we cut 22 people already a couple of years ago, so the choices were certainly far more limited than we've had before. So what will we do? With a non-override budget, we will have to cut a house administrator, which is a huge impact at the middle school. It will have put great pressure on supervision, safety, the supervision of students. It'll impact our anti-bullying program. Those house administrators are the first contact for parents. Why did we include that if it's so important? Because we felt that we did not want to put two additional classroom teachers on the cut list. It will require still that we cut 4.5 teachers. We're not certain what grade level, but we know every school will be impacted. We've been very fortunate to hire great young people, and those, unfortunately, are the people who will be cut loose. Where would we cut those four people? We don't know yet, but as you can see from this chart, pick a point, any point, and you will end up, what this shows is if we cut one teacher out of any grade in our system. And what you will find is that wherever we put it, we're going to end up with at least 26, or more likely 26 to 28 in a classroom. So that's kind of the impact that we're facing. I'm trying to cut this a little bit short, believe it or not. The other budget is the override budget. It provides 2.75%, $940,000. It still requires cuts. It's a deficit of about $110,000, but we feel that we can make those cuts without impacting class size and without impacting the safety and the supervision at the middle school. So in closing, like I said, we certainly recognize that we are in difficult economic times. We get that. Most of us don't have to go too far to either know someone who is out of work or underemployed. We feel it ourselves, and our lives are touched by it every day. So our decisions on what we're asking of the House tonight is done with a great understanding and appreciation. You make the decision. My job is to use the resources we are provided to provide the best value for your investment in our schools and our children. We will do that. My role is also to tell you the differences that we face between the budgets before you tonight, and I hope I did that. I've not said this before this group in the past, but while we will work hard as we possibly can to get the biggest return on your investment, I believe that with the continuing whittling away at the resources available to us, we are going to be hard-pressed going forward to meet the same high expectations and level of responsiveness that you have for us and for our system. Thank you very much for your confidence and your continued support.
Thank you. Superintendent Scott Carpenter, LS Regional High School.
That was shorter than 90 minutes, John. Thank you. While we're loading things up here, for those who don't know me, I'm Scott Carpenter. This is my first year giving a presentation here at Sudbury Town Meeting, but I've been sitting here in the audience for the last 9 years as a Sudbury resident, and I have been greatly benefited are benefiting from the Sudbury K-8 system because we, my wife and I have two children in the K-8 system, both at NOYS. So to start off, I'll say that Ellis is a great high school. And one of the things that makes Ellis such a great high school are the quality of the feeder systems that we have. The K-8 systems really provide the foundation for the high school to be so strong. The things we really proud ourselves on at the high school is strong connections from our faculty members to the students, a curriculum that inspires and motivates, and a school that really provides an outstanding college preparation. It's also a high school that's undergoing a great deal of strain as the enrollments have increased and outpaced our ability to hire new teachers to meet the students' needs. Like the Sudbury school system, LS is also struggling with higher than optimal class sizes. Our class sizes, as they become increased, are becoming or increasing the strain and our ability or inability to have our teachers have those quality connections, and also our inability of having our teachers to have the time and to inspire, innovate, and motivate. So just to quickly go through some slides here on enrollment. As I said, the high school is having increasing enrollment. Our enrollment is going from 1614 to 1645. It's a 2% enrollment increase just in the next year. Sudbury's share of the enrollment is 84.5% of our students. So Sudbury is the dominant partner in this. In terms of the budget, there's a huge difference between budget when it comes to the LS and assessment. So budget's the budget that the high school will operate on. So in a no override situation, we have a $23.9 million budget. However, I'll get into the assessment and all the calculus involved in assessment here in a second. The override budget is $24.3 million. The difference between the two budgets is $386,000, and the $386,000 become what we would have to close that gap. And to close that gap, the punchline is a reduction of 4.7 teachers and support staff. In an override situation, we would actually have a status quo budget. We wouldn't add programs, we wouldn't add staff, we wouldn't be cutting programs. And now for a quick calculus. When it comes to the school's budget, it's the assessment, it's what we charge back to the towns of Lincoln and Sudbury that matter. So in the case of our in the case of the LS budget, 84.5% of the population are LS students or Sudbury students. So the Sudbury budget, what is assessed back to the towns is this $19.8 million. In the case of a override budget, what's assessed back to the towns is the $20.1 million budget. So in the case of a non-override, as I said, the reduction would be 3.7 teachers and also one member of support staff. In addition to the 3.7 teachers and the one member of support staff, we would also be cutting department budgets. We would also be depleting fee revenues that we have in revolving accounts to go and limit the number of teachers and support staff that would have to be laid off. In an override budget, as I said, the staffing remains level, and and we'll end up having level funding of department budgets. We do have to go and dip into some of the revolving accounts in order to go and make this be a level staff budget. As Dr. Brackett mentioned, the Sudbury Public Schools negotiated their contracts. So did the high school. The high school.
Scott, that's not your cell phone. That's the 5-minute button. Could you let us know approximately how much longer you have so I can ask the hall?
About 45 minutes. No, 4 or 5.
Say 4?
4 or 5.
I thought I heard you say 4.
4 works.
Can we have consent of the hall? Everyone in favor, raise your cards. Those opposed, thank you.
So, as with Sudbury, the teachers went and pitched in here to help really put us in a position of saving 7 teachers' jobs in just this year alone. So, over the course of the next 3 years, we will be saving up almost $2 million compared to if the contract that was in existence prior to this had kept going for the next 3 years. In addition to the contract savings, Sudbury families and Lincoln families who use the high school pay some of the highest fees compared to all of the communities that surround the high school. And as Dr. Brackett brought up, Sudbury and LS, Wayland, and Lincoln are all engaged in the G4 process to look for efficiencies, but we're also finding efficiencies in-house. So last year we went and closed one of the house offices. It's been a challenging time for the administrators, but that was something that saved $165,000, or essentially 4 teaching positions. This year we'll actually be reducing the administration by another 0.2 by moving from a position that is the district treasurer to actually stipending it. We've had savings in copier replacements, savings on utilities, savings on mailings, and also savings on advertising. But despite the concessions by the teachers, despite the efficiencies, despite the high fees, we're still in a situation of having to reduce staff. And this is the 3rd year of reducing staff. So at the end of this, we're going to be down over 12 teachers from just 3 years ago. This comes on the heels of 6 years of really rapid growth at the high school, so that over the course of the past 9 years, LS has seen our student enrollment grow by 330 students, 25% enrollment growth. But in the case of an override, we will actually find that our teaching staff will be up 3. Over 3 teachers. In a non-override situation, our teaching staff will actually be flat. We'll have the exact same number of teachers as we had, but we have 330 additional students. When it comes to the high school, it's not just this difference between hiring and enrollment growth, which is causing rapid increases in class sizes. But it also gets down to the individual level, which really gets at our ability to go and match students with things that they want, the choices they want at the high school, and things that they need. And 2 examples that I've been sharing with people over this budget season are 2 classes that we don't have on the books this year at the high school. One of those is called Spanish 5-1. Spanish 5-1 is if you were taking Spanish in middle school and wanted to go on and take the highest level of Spanish for the next 4 years at the high school, ultimately be prepared for that Spanish AP exam. The challenge I had is with these increasing class sizes, we only had about 20 or so students sign up for Spanish 5-1. To offer Spanish 5-1, it meant that the next level down would go off at 2 high numbers to actually make feasible. So we've tried to find a way to meld 5-1 back into 5-2. But it doesn't make for a quality program that's giving students what they want and what they need. On the flip side of the scale is a course called Applied Biology. And Applied Biology is a course for our most challenged students in biology. And these days in Massachusetts, in order to get a high school diploma, you need to go and pass a high school MCAS exam in the sciences. This is a class specifically designed to help these students meet that need. But again, it was too small to have to go on and to have that class offered at a smaller size, and by small, 15 students, it meant that the next level up would be absurdly high. So we ended up melding those students into the next higher level. Again, not giving the students what they want and need. And then last to close here, I just want to kind of bring this back to what matters. Ultimately, what matters are outcomes. And you know, my wife and I, as I said, we moved here to Sudbury for the schools. We moved here to see our children get that step up. And ultimately, it's the outcome. It's the ability of our students to be prepared for colleges and to go off to college and go off to schools that are good and schools that they want. The challenge that we have here is that the high school, if you look at a blended cost of Sudbury K-8 and the high school compared to every one of the 20 communities in Massachusetts that have 90% of their graduates going on to college, I mean, and there's 21 communities. This is the total list in Massachusetts. You know, we're in the bottom third in terms of the bang for the buck for our schools, and still our schools are strained. So I'd like to reiterate what Dr. Brackett said and would just encourage you to support the schools. Thank you.
Maureen Valente for the town.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, and good evening, everyone. I am Maureen Valente, the town manager, and I'll be presenting the budget on town services for this evening. I thought I'd start, as the others have done, and just recap the last 2 years. We're mentioning this point again and again. Here it is for the town. For FY09, the budget growth was 1.19% over the prior year. To make that work, we reduced staffing, and we also cut significantly into the expenses that all the departments have to work with. Following an FY10, 1.75, we originally had planned staffing reductions then as well, but with the ongoing negotiations we just recently completed with the firefighters, we were able to prevent those staffing reductions. Because the negotiations took me the greater part of the year, I did have to freeze hiring because I did not know when we would settle those, and I think people remember 3 years ago they did extend into arbitration, so we didn't know when we would have those savings. So we did freezes instead, but now, as I said, most of the groups we have settled with them, and those changes, as Dr. Brackett has said, because we have the same benefits package with the SPS, have saved jobs and saved a lot of real dollars. The town has about 31 departments, and even within those departments, there's even more functions than that. So I could spend 5 minutes on any one of them. So to stay within the moderator's time allotment, I will just stay at a very high level in terms of the overall town services. Under the non-override budget, that is the budget that is planned within the available revenues. The budget is growing 1.13% above FY10. That is about $203,000, and most of that's going to public safety departments. You might note there the public employee municipal benefits is up $64,000. That's actually mostly from non-health insurance. The health insurance, we hope, when all is settled with all the unions, will actually be going down for FY11 over the FY10. The override budget, on the other hand, is about $260,000 higher, or about 2.57% growth after offsets. Again, most of those dollars do go to our frontline employees, our frontline departments, public safety, from there. Under the general government, the next largest, I do have a significant more going to technology, where we need to be replacing most of the, or start replacing much of the technology that we've let get old under these past couple of years. This is what we have, where our productivity savings has been in the last few years, has been under technology. We have to protect that. The override allocations there, I've shown how those, under the override, where the money would be directed. Again, public works, technology, police department, health department, it is going to the frontline services under those, the override where the additional funds would be allocated. I just wanted to comment again, remind you why we need town services and where the budget is being allocated. We need it for our public safety. And all of those services that are there that contribute to your safety as residents, and for our business members. The town provides benefits for the town to provide the services for everybody. It's our tax collector and assessors and accountant's office, et cetera, that is the golden goose that generates the dollars that provide the money for the schools and for everyone. We run the town meeting, town elections, committees where needing staff assistance. All that money is found on the town side. We have residents demanding the service levels for quality of life, and you can see those services there that are so key to the quality, the good and very high quality of life in Sudbury. I wanted to mention, and you may not think about this as often, that we need to protect the investment and service delivery capacity of the town assets that we have. We have to protect and invest in our roads, our walkways, catch basins, drainage structures, buildings, the DPW trucks, and our lands and parks. All of those we've acquired with taxpayer dollars, and we have to, if they're going to continue being part of our service delivery, we have to be able to invest in them. I wanted to give you one sample here. This is a slide from the town's GIS system. What is this? This is over 2,000 catch basins in the town. All of them need to be maintained and cleaned if they're going to do the function that they have to do. We have more and more things we've brought up on GIS to be able to help us with a management of them, with planning for them. This just gives you a sample of one asset and how we have to protect it to be able to provide the public safety and quality of life that we need here. As the superintendents have both said, the town is very grateful for the tax dollars that have been provided. We try very hard to be good stewards of them. We feel we need to act responsibly as a town to make sure we can deliver these critical services. And we would like to thank you for your support. And, Mr. Moderator, if I could have 30 more seconds?
Yes.
I just would like to say and recognize that all the public safety and public works employees for their work over the past few weeks with the flooding that we have had. It has been... Dispatch centers have just been overwhelmed. If there's someone in here who hasn't called them, you're probably unique. The volume of calls they have had. Our police department, with the traffic management, you've been caught up in those too, as we've tried to say, you can't get out of Sudbury and head east for the past few weeks. It's like a twilight zone. You just can't get there. And they have had to manage that. And how many of you have looked on the website to see the fabulous service the police did? And we've heard so much... response to this, other towns, MEMA, others saying, you know, this is a heck of an idea here to be able to update and show where those blockages are in the alternative routes. And my thanks to our police and IT department for that. Fire department with all the pumping, and those of you know, if you had a public safety issue with water in your basement, that provides that they can come and help you. And our public works department and everything they had to do. I just think they've all been just extraordinary the last few weeks. And thank you for what you've shown to them as well. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. For all the voters who are standing in the back or sitting along the railing there, I'm going to ask anybody who has a vacant seat next to them that's sitting, please raise your hand. Could you come away from there and take one of those seats? Thank you very much. Likewise, keep your hands raised, please. Likewise, there's many seats up in the balcony if you wish to sit up there. Yes. I don't know what it says there. No, it isn't. You may sit there. We have four seats in front if you wish to take them. You may remove those white signs. Four seats in front. Now two or three. Now none. Plenty of seats. Just take a look at anybody who has their hands raised. As soon as everyone gets seated, we're going to call on other folks to see who wants to be heard on the limiting motion. Does anybody need a handout
or a warrant? Raise your hand if you need a handout or a warrant. Boy Scout, okay, you can put your hands down if you have a seat next to you. Anybody who needs a warrant or a handout, raise your hand. Boy Scouts, can you pass those out to anybody whose hands are raised? I see a gentleman over here. Do the Boy Scouts up there have warrants, handouts yet? Over there? How many Boy Scouts are up in the up there? Just one? How many Boy Scouts do we have down here? One? Two? We'll send someone up there in a minute. We have four. Patty?
Yeah, but there's only one Boy Scout.
Where
is he? I don't see one. What is the fellow's
name? Leif Scramstead? Is that you up there? Are you the only Boy Scout up there? Okay. Leif, when you're finished handing out handouts there, could you go to the other side and hand them out also? Do you have any more? Great. Over on the other side. Could you raise your hand if you don't have one? Yeah, there's a couple on this side here. Hand them out. Okay. Okay, please come to order. Does anybody wish to be heard on the limiting motion which establishes the upper limit of the budget? Signify by raising your card, please. Yes.
Abrams, 24 Goodman's Hill Road. Procedural question, Mr. Moderator. On this limiting budget, if it doesn't pass, does that mean the budget is the non-override budget automatically? Or is there another vote? How is this working procedurally?
As I understand it, if this override limiting motion does not pass, I believe the Finance Committee will then make another, that ends that. We still have to have another limiting motion, and I understand the Finance Committee is going to make a motion on a non-override limiting motion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, that is correct. Does that answer your question, Mr. Abrams? No, it's a different number. No. Down in the end here, we got a Boy Scout down there? Thank you.
Thank you. Ivan Lubash, 25 Barbara Road. I'd like to speak against voting the override. I'd like to bring to the attention recognizing that this community is very liberal. And I mean that in a positive sense, even though I consider myself conservative. And they were willing to do and work for a lot of people. However, you have a number of families and individuals in this community, some who have lived here most of their lives. We've been here 42. And are on limited incomes. I mean, a 5% increase in my income would be fantastic. And a lot of us are on fixed income. There has been savings accounts, less than 1%. So I recognize that there are problems with budgets. I have been involved with town budgets with the library. When 20, 25 years ago, we had to cut. We had to cut staff. We had to cut supplies. It hurt. But we existed. We did well for the town. And we recovered. And I think in this instance here, the basic budget, not the override, includes an increase which a lot of people are not getting. So I strongly recommend that we vote against the override budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? On the aisle right there.
Mike Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I want to follow up on that comment, and it has to do with peer comparisons, particularly as it relates to the high school, LS. When we compare ourselves to a town like Dover, whose assessed value per capita is 76% higher than Sudbury, or to Weston, or to Wellesley, or Concord and Carlisle, and it's not a valid comparison. We're not looking at the pay side of this equation. When you look at Dover-Sherburne, there's 1,000 fewer students in that school than Lincoln-Sudbury. It's not a pure comparison. The town is far more wealthier than this town. There are, however, regional high schools outside of 128 that are similar in size to LS that are in communities that are more closely related to Sudbury than Dover or Concord or Carlisle or Weston. And if you look at the spending in those regional high schools per student compared to LS, we're 24% higher. Special education spending only amounts for less than a third of that difference. So it raises the question in my mind, why is our spending per student so much higher? And why are we comparing ourselves to a Dover or a Weston or a Carlisle when we're Sudbury?
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, is the gentleman in the middle here? Can you stand up, please? Thank you. And can we get him a mic?
Paul Fakas, 231 Knobscott Road. Last year, the Budget Review Task Force Committee, having worked about 2 years with about 20 professional members, submitted a whole bunch of recommendations as to how the structural deficit could be reduced. I see nothing reflecting any of those recommendations, which include a consolidation of the school system administrative side to make more of an integrated K-12 system, a group insurance commission scheme to reduce health benefits, regionalization of public safety, regionalization of public works. Would somebody respond to why none of those recommendations have been addressed?
Grab the phone. Town manager will answer the question.
I can address part of it, and that's a good question on the group insurance commission, which is one approach for reducing health insurance costs. We had already had in place a different direction, which we pursued with the town and the Board of Selectmen and the Sudbury School Committee. Analysis of that was recently put in the Chairman Keller and Chairwoman of the SPS put in the article in the paper summarizing that we actually over 3 years did as well, perhaps slightly better, than what we could have achieved under the GIC. It does not mean GIC is off the table for the next round, but it does mean at this particular time, if we're looking at just dollar savings and where we would be after 3 years, the suggestion was on the right path, well taken. This is just the direction at this point that went, and if you're trying to measure by outcome, felt it had a similar outcome as we would have gotten with the GIC.
Thank you. Mr. Woodard, were you going to add to that, or you're all set? Okay. Mr. Jacobson from the Finance Committee.
Just to add on what the town manager said about the GIC, I was the co-chair of the Budget Review Task Force. And what people still have to remember is it's not a decision that is solely within the control of the town. As the law stands right now, 70% of all town union employees must vote in favor of going into the GIC. That's not something that's going to happen right now. What we've been doing is lobbying the legislature because that is where the change must occur to allow the town the ability to have its employees participate in the GIC without having that high hurdle that is going to be very difficult to reach right now.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, the GIC is the Group Insurance Commission. It's basically where all state employees get their health care from.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Stand up. Okay.
I can maybe a couple of more. Thank you. A good reminder. One of their two of the recommendations were to validate whether or not there were savings from regionalization of public safety administration, and also validate whether or not there was savings from regionalization of public works. We are still looking at regionalization across all town services with other towns near us. I started off asking the towns around us, were they interested in sitting down and talking with us about those particular ones? They were not. But they are interested in other areas. So, for instance, we moved with regionalizing with Wayland Recreation Services. Our shared recreation director is here tonight. We have been looking at other services with the towns around us. One of the more interesting things that we're looking at is regionalizing combined public safety dispatch at this point under Fire Chief McLean and Police Chief Rick Glavin. We are putting in a grant application to see if we can get a grant for feasibility study to see if we can begin to do that one. That seems to be a good potential. We've received votes from the boards of selectmen of about six or seven surrounding towns saying they're interested in working with us. Sudbury's taken a leadership position on that. So those are two other issues that were mentioned in there in terms of the budget review task force we think are good directions as well, and that's where it stands on those.
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien?
Yes. Pecos also asked about school consolidation, and there was a group put together, a consolidation working group that had about 15 members. We looked at an assortment of different models. There's different ways that consolidation could be approached. It clearly involves Lincoln. As we know, we share this high school with them. And at the same time, the superintendents that was previously mentioned, the G4, came together from Wayland, Lincoln, Sudbury, and those four communities. And those superintendents are looking at opportunities that they might be able to find, the changes that they might be able to make from a managerial point of view that wouldn't involve town meeting activities and actions that will take longer to work out from a political aspect between the two communities. So the consolidation working group opted to allow the superintendents to have some time to see what they might be able to come up with in 15 specific areas that they laid out in a presentation to the group, and we're looking forward to hearing back from them sometime in July approximately.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the limiting motion? Yes, sir. Please stand. You can come right out in front here and hand him the mic. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Jan Hardenberg. We moved here 26 years ago.
Excuse me. Can you hold the mic a little closer and repeat
Hello?
Your name and address?
Yes. My name is Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. We moved here 26 years ago. We moved here because of the schools. And we put our kids through school. We got a great education there, went to great schools. They've really done well. And so we're done paying for that. But I think it's important to support the next generation so that they can get a great education, they can get great jobs, so that they can maintain Sudbury, and so that they can pay Social Security when I retire, which... I plan to retire and stay in Sudbury, so I'm not one of those people who's just here for the schools and gone. Those slides weren't just comparing us to Concord and Dover. And I did a lot of research today. Sudbury, we're actually, at least according to the numbers I saw, we're number 6 in per capita income. So we might not be at the top of the list, but we're not down in the middle of the state either. I feel that the override vote, as clearly stated, Those budgets are not growing. They're just being maintained. An override vote is a vote to maintain Sudbury. A vote against the override is a vote to change the character of Sudbury and to diminish its schools and services. Thank you.
Excuse me. Please. No more clapping. If you can do your clapping through your vote, which we'll be doing momentarily. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, right here on the end. Sir, you can come right up here to this mic.
Andy McEntee, Brookdale Road. I have a little presentation on. I actually think some of the numbers that were being promulgated by the Finance Committee are incorrectly stated.
Sir, if you can just repeat your name and get a little closer to the mic.
Andy McEntee, Brookdale Road.
Thank you.
I believe some of the numbers being promulgated by the Finance Committee are incorrectly stated, and I have a little presentation that I'd like to show on this. Can we do the number one, sheet number five? So sheet five shows the column one, the estimated increase of fiscal year 11 average residential tax bill. And if you look at the first number, zero for the override, that comes out to 293. And then if it's a $1.2 million override, I came out with a 476 number. And I'd like to say these numbers are, I did a public information request from the town to get the town numbers, and these match, at least the first one does, right up with it. I think the second one does as well, although I just got the 1.2 number. I'd also like to look at column two, which is the estimated increase in our fiscal 11 levy. I think that's very important in the sense that it's really what we have to keep our eye on the ball. That represents the total taxing power of the town. And you can see that with no override, it's going up 3.24. With a 1.2, it's going to go up on the order of 5.22. So just from the taxing power of the town, what we're looking at is 3% with no override or 5%. That's a 66% increase with an override. As to the numbers, the residential tax bill, I know, for example, the FinCom talked about the 224 number versus 293, and I'd like to just go into that a little bit here. Can you go to sheet four? All right. So sheet four, this first that's the estimated levy growth there, so it's just showing the individual components that make it up. The $60 million fiscal 10 levy limit, 2.5% increase, that gives our levy base. Our new growth estimated that I got from the town, 450, that's our estimated FY11 levy limit, 62, that's 324. If you go down to the next one, same numbers, but increase the override by to $1.2 million, that's where we get the 5.22 for an estimated levy growth. Can you go to number three? Number three is looking at the what we call the residential increase of the taxes. This is what FinCom said, 2.24, 2.93. And we had a big argument over this. In a way, I'm willing to stipulate that it's going to be somewhere between 2.24, 2.93. In a way, it's not critically important in the sense of one of the FinCom members said these are all estimates, and that's a point well taken. But I would like to look at it and see why one of the statements FinCom made is absolutely wrong tonight, that statement being that the numbers that they gave include new and commercial taxes. I don't believe they do include any part of commercial taxes. So if you look at these numbers coming up here, the first one, again, start with the FY10 base of $55 million, add in the $1.3 million 2.5 increase, and notice the first column, that's the increase of the average tax bill, so 2.3 based on our 2.5 levy. The unused levy is 0.14%. The debt is minus 2.2 because it decreased. Subtotal, and this is the town subtotal. I would not subtotal it right there, but that's their 2.24 number, and then a new growth component, which is actually a levy-based calculation, and you come up with the town's 2.93. Over there on the right-hand column is the impact of the average tax, which is about $306, no override. Now, if you go down to, not this next one, but the second one, that's the $1.9 million override there, or $1.2 override. So is it the third one down? Yes. And if you look at that, first of all, notice the numbers. It says override $1.95 there. Bottom line is all the numbers have been gone through a multiplication factor of 91.27%, and I'll talk about that later. But again, if you look at the increase of the average tax bill with an override, 476, again, that's residential, not the levy, but that's the residential portion. And just to show where I got this, can you do a number three FY11 budget? This is from the town. Number three? Yes. And maybe zoom in a little bit to make that bigger. There you go. So these are our town numbers that were given to us. And notice down at the bottom, the town actually says, well, if we do the first column down there, read across the top, this is the estimated average tax bill. And the percentage-wise, the last column, that's the 293. They're 224, so these numbers match exactly with mine. The 224 is backing out this new growth component. And then the total change is exactly what I came up with, the 293. That's no override. With the override, those were the numbers that I, the 494 we were just talking about. What I really want to drive home here is the calculation to come up with these numbers. And basically, first of all, the numbers in the first column, amount of residential increase, they're coming from our levy, but they're multiplied by this factor called the levy percentage, 91.27%, and I'll tell you where that came from. The other thing is that if you look at, so you can take these increases, like the individual 2.5% unused levy, it totals $1.752 million. The reason we got 2.93% is on the very bottom right there, it shows you $1.75 million divided by $59 million. That $59 million is the residential portion of the levy. Next one, please, which will be... one second, just one more, please.
Everybody's being timed. Thank you.
All right. So this is our number four. Okay. Can you blow that up a little bit? All right. So,
what's your point of order? That's not a valid point of order. I'm sorry.
So the numbers that we have here are just how the calculations were made. And again, the first column is the full-blown levy. The second one is the residential share. Again, the multiplication factor is 91.27%. Now, again, I know that's a long way in numbers, but please stick with me. The reason that I said all this is, can you go to the next one? The tax recap. It's actually number two.
Blow that up. Mr. McEntee?
About 2 minutes.
Hang on a second.
1 minute.
I need permission.
All right.
Does the hall wish to give permission to Mr. McEntee? If so, raise your cards. All those opposed? Mr. McEntee, your time is up, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Finance Committee has a short reply.
We stand by our numbers.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Stand up.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? My name is Bob Hatcher. I live at 362 Peckham Road. A question to the Finance Committee. Just to be very, very clear about this, what is the percentage change to my residential tax rate next year without the override, and what is the percent change with the override? Thank you.
Did you want the dollar amount or the percentage change?
Percentage amount, please.
Percentage amount. Do we have that amount? Yes.
Without the override, the... increase on the average existing home assessment is 2.24%. The total tax increase, total levy goes up 2.93%. The increase on the average tax assessment is 2.24%. With the override, the increase on the average home assessment is 4.06%. The total increase in the levy, including new growth, is 4.76%. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes, could you pass the mic to that woman? Could you stand up, please, ma'am?
Wendy Casey, Fox Run Road. This afternoon I was in Town Center holding up a sign saying, "Vote yes for Sudbury." And I want to thank all of you who honked in your support. A gentleman pulled up and he rolled down his window and he was at the light and he said, "You're voting for more taxes?" And I looked at his license plate as it caught my eye, and he was from New Hampshire, so I knew I really didn't have a debate to have with him. However, what I did say was, what other option do we have? If not us, who? Who's going to support the town of Sudbury but its own residents? Unfortunately, we don't have any other way to raise the revenue that we've lost because of the recession and other reasons, but to increase our taxes. No one wants to pay more taxes, but in order to preserve our schools and our town, we must. I strongly encourage you to support the override, to support the decisions made by the Finance Committee, our selectmen, and the dedicated public servants that we have in Sudbury. Thank you.
Thank you. How many people wish to be heard to add new information? Could you raise your hand, please? One. Two. This gentleman here, could you stand, please?
I'm not Jim Peck, 49 Phillips Road. I'm not sure how new this information is, so I'll be very, very brief. $191 is what was cited in some of the materials. Call it $291, $391, whatever it is. It's small in my view. You're talking about somewhere between 50 cents and a dollar a day to support our town and our schools in terms of that added tax burden. No one likes to pay more taxes, but that, in my estimation, is a very small price to pay for the kind of quality of schools and the kind of quality of town services that we've come to expect and, quite frankly, deserve.
Anyone else wish to be heard before we vote? Could you stand up, sir?
Glenn Merrill Skoloff, 18 Allen Place. A few years ago, Boston Magazine published a lot of numbers ranking schools on various metrics, matriculation rates, graduation rates, SAT scores, MCAS scores, et cetera, and they ranked them with a lot of other numbers like median household income, median house price, student-teacher ratios, computers in the classroom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not a statistician. I do hold a science degree, and I kicked those numbers all over the place to look for correlations and couldn't find them. There was no series that I could put in to make a straight line. So I did ask someone who works for a challenged school system here in the state as a principal what he felt was a good metric for a school. And he said that the best metric is the school meeting its goals? And that each individual school really has its own metric. The school administrators and teachers and principals know what that school needs and know what they need to do to get it. And what I've heard from the school officials here is that what we need to meet Sudbury's goals and Lincoln Sudbury's goals is an override vote. So I'd like to support that. I'd like to ask your support for it. And just as a comment on your point, with the new revised numbers, it's about 75 cents, or less than a third of a cup of coffee at a popular franchise here in town.
Thank you. Any other? Yes. Could you bring the mic to that gentleman there? The mic's already on, sir.
Stuart Lowell, 58 Hudson Road. There's been a number of people just recently speaking about the small amount that this override represents. I disagree with that, and I think I'd like to try and bring out a bigger dynamic here. It seems to me, for what it's worth, that we do face a junction in the road. There's probably two Sudbury's now. There's my demographic, which I recall from some previous publication is maybe 40% of the town, and there's the 60% that have children in the school. Well, I pay about $10,000 a year in taxes, $100,000 in the next 10 years if I stay here. And I judge that I get pretty much no services for that $100,000. And that's okay. I'll do it because probably just because of inertia. But I won't do it happily and just see these numbers getting bigger and bigger. Your challenge is to keep me here. Because if I leave, I won't be replaced by another 60-something-year-old. I'll be replaced by a 30- or 40-year-old, and they'll bring children, And in 5 years, you'll be facing tens of millions of dollars of further spend on schools. So this is a pretty serious issue. You need me to stay. And I don't feel that $400 is a small amount of money. So for me, I'll stay, but only if in some way the town can face this challenge. It's no good coming back to me to pay for these school expenditures.
Question's been called. Is there a second? Yes, there is. Anybody who wishes to be heard to add someone new? No, I didn't call on you, sir. There's one. Anyone else? We have to. The question's been called. Please. The question has been called and seconded. We're going to take a vote, but for virtue of that vote, there's two people who wish to speak. Keep that in mind in making your vote. All those in favor of the call to question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it gets way more than the two-thirds necessary vote. We're going to proceed to a vote on the limiting motion. Can we put that back on the screen? It's already on the screen. All those in favor of the override limiting motion signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it requires a majority of a vote. It gets way more than a majority. The limit. No, please, please. We're not finished yet. We have more to do. We are now moving to the main motion on the budget. I recognize the Finance Committee for that motion.
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth on the warrant under Article 4 in the column FY11 override for fiscal year 2011 as printed in the Finance Committee handout dated April 5, 2010. The following items to be raised as designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers from ambulance reserve for appropriation account to 200 public safety, $487,089. The sum of $6,450,128 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to item 900, town employee benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $10,758,918 to be expended under the direction of the town manager and to authorize the purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreements. Set amounts voted hereunder in excess of the non-override column are contingent upon passage of a ballot question for that purpose at a special town election.
Does that receive a second? It does. Does the Finance Committee wish to make a further presentation?
No.
Thank you. Selectmen, do they wish to make a further presentation?
No. Selectmen.
Thank you. If you can keep that on the view graph, my understanding from town council about that last clause, the last four lines being added, is that if this main budget, as you see on the screen, happens to pass, it's going to go to a town election, a townwide election. If it passes there, it's in effect. If it does not pass there, because of those words, we need not have another a special town meeting to work on the budget. It will automatically revert to the non-override budget. Does everyone understand that? Did I understand that? Is that correct? Amazing. Okay. And now, what we're going to do is that we're going to use the same procedure we've been using for the last two decades. I will start by reading the budgets from the handout in the numerical order by title. If anyone has a motion to amend or a question, just raise your card. For example, I will say 200, public safety. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question involving 200, public safety? If someone has a motion to amend to increase a line item which would make the applicable column in the handout exceed the limiting amount that you just voted, the motion to amend must be in one of two forms. I move to increase, for example, 200 public safety to the sum of X and to reduce 600, for example, 600 culture and recreation to that same sum. Those two numbers must balance. Or you may just make a motion to amend to reduce 200 public safety to the sum of X. A motion simply to increase a line item will not be accepted if it exceeds the applicable column in the handout. This is so because consideration for the budget has just been preceded by a vote limiting the total budget amount. We will now debate and vote on any motion to amend and discuss any question. We will arrive at the end of the process with a main motion, as it may have been amended, and we will then vote on it. So we're now going to do the budget checkoff list. Yes, sir.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Mr. Moderator, it occurs to me that doing it this way means that if any budget amounts get shifted around in the override budget, then that has the effect of making the same shifts in the non-override budget. And I'm not sure that that's what is really intended. I mean, instead of...
Excuse me, Mr. Coe? Mr. Coe, you've been here long enough to know that's not a proper point of order, but I'll answer your question anyway. I had the same question this afternoon of town council, and he informed me that any movement within the override budget will not take effect if the town-wide ballot fails on the override budget. I think that answers your question.
Not really, because what that says is that in view of what you said earlier, which was that we wouldn't need a special town meeting, nor would we need to take a vote tonight on the non-override budget. That says that if it reverts to the same distribution, if the override fails, then the non-override budget, I think you just got done saying, would have the same allocation of funds that it says now in the warrant. And the question is, how could that be changed because we're not going to have a special town meeting?
The further statement to answer that question, I think, is that if you want to make a motion on the override budget and you want it to affect not only the override budget but the non-override budget, you have to so state in your amendment. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. That's a pretty cumbersome way to do it, I guess. But
that's
yes,
the only way you can do it under this procedure that we've been doing for the last 20 years. Okay. Okay. Hang on a second. It seems we've forgotten. Let me read to you the only three things you can make in a point of order. And the reason why Town Meeting Time says this is because you can interrupt the speaker, including me. And our procedure doesn't often allow that to happen. So, you may make a point of order if you think the speaker entitled to the floor is a non-voter or a voter who has overstayed his time limit. That's one. Two, is what the speaker is saying or proposing indecorous, which means not nice, frivolous, irrelevant, illegal, or contrary to proper procedure? You may use a point of order for a third thing. Is any pending action frivolous, irrelevant, illegal, or contrary to proper procedure? So I don't think your point of order, Mr. Coe, was in order. Sir, I will ask you if you have a point of order that falls within those three categories. Anybody else have a point of order that falls within those three categories? We're going to proceed. Thank you. The correct numbers are shown in the motion on the view graph, and it's also in the handout that you all have. Any motion to amend or questions involving the following line items. Again, I will read each line item. If you have a question on that line item or wish to make a motion to amend, please raise your card. So the first line item, if I'm reading this in the order, is 300 Sudbury Public Schools net. Yes, sir. Can you stand and wait for a mic? You can come around front here.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. I'm sorry if I'm the only person who doesn't understand this, but are we voting on both the non-override and the override budget at the same time in this motion?
No. What right now, the motion before you on the budget is the override budget. And if you want to turn that into a non-override budget, which just failed in the limiting motion, you can move to amend these numbers downward.
So there's no...
What the limiting motion did is establish an upper limit. That means you can't spend more than that, which is why I said any motion to amend has to be in one of two ways. But if the town wishes on any line item, which are all override numbers, you can spend less than that.
I understand that. My understanding is that we are voting and if on a budget, and if that override is rejected by a vote of the town, that then we will automatically have a budget that's a non-override budget. Is that will that be addressed in a separate motion or article, or is the non-override budget also being addressed in this motion?
We're going to take a 1-minute recess. Did I exceed my 1 minute? Okay. Let's see if I can answer your question, and probably other people have the same question, so it's obviously a good one. Right now, when I go line by line, I'm not going to mention the amounts. I'm only going to mention the line item. But what I'm referring to is the line item in the column in the handout, which is the last column, fiscal year 2011 override. That will be the number. So if we get finished tonight and vote all those numbers, we'll have an override budget in front of us that's going to be presented to all of you plus the rest of the town, all of whom who should be here tonight. And if it passes there, that's the budget. If it fails, it goes back to the third column that's marked fiscal year 2011 non-override. So what we're actually voting at the townwide election is to increase the non-override number to the override number. And if that fails, then we're back to the non-override number. And the purpose of that is so we don't have to come back to another special town meeting to do that. You need a mic. Yes. Go ahead. If you want to see it that way, absolutely. So if I said yes in the beginning, you would have been okay? I apologize, I'm a lawyer. Okay. Before we get into each line item, does anyone else have a question about the budget? Yes, sir. Can you take the mic right next to you?
Collinger, 55 Washington Drive. There are amendments to the budget that would be brought in a non-override situation that are unnecessary in an override situation. So you wouldn't bring an amendment to amend the override budget, but you would bring an amendment to amend the non-override budget. How does that get handled? Well, for example, I mean, I'll just give you as an example. The Sudbury Public Schools need $398,000 to keep the FTE count that they currently have. They only need that in a non-override budget. They don't need that in an override budget. How would you bring in a motion like that under the override budget?
So what would your, in your example, sir, what would you like to do? Reduce the non-override number in that line item?
That would be correct, yes. You would have, I'm asking how you would bring that motion. Would you reduce the non-override budget line item amount when we're voting on an override budget number? So I don't understand how you do it.
Okay, can I have your attention, please? Thank you very much. It's starting to get fairly complicated, as you might have guessed, because we also the town also has to know what to put on the override ballot. So what we're going to do first is just what we're doing. We're going to go through the override line-by-line budget. And if anyone has an amendment on that to make it, anyone has a question, ask it. We'll see how that all goes. And then when we get to the bottom, we'll vote that number, the budget. It can be the same number or it can be a different number. When we finish that, we will then have a motion for a limiting motion on the non-override budget, should the ballot question fail. And then we'll go line by line under that. Under the questions that were asked, that seems to be the most straightforward way to do it. We can try to combine the two, but it's going to get very, very complicated. So let's start the process and let's get moving. Line 300, we're talking only about the override budget right now. Line 300, Sudbury Public Schools net. Is there a question or a motion to amend? I see none. The next item is SPS employee benefits. Motion to amend or a question? I see none. Next is SPS health insurance reserve. A question on which line item, sir? Why don't you stand up, sir? Can we get a mic over here? Why don't you come in front? Oh, okay, we're passing it over.
Thank you. Hello? Yeah, Tim Hankins, French Road. The question is not so much the first 300, it's the total. Do we have an opportunity to say we would like to amend the total for SPS? Rather than get into the details of trying to determine the breakdown.
I'm sorry, sir. Town Council advises that you cannot. It's not a line item.
Okay, then I have a motion then. You probably passed it. But can I do it now?
Hang on. Okay.
The motion is to cap the override budget of 35213084 at 34658472 for the SBS. So take it out of one of those three buckets.
Hang on. Can you repeat the motion when, by the way, it has to be in writing? But why don't you try it orally first and then write it out three times. Once for me, one for the town clerk, one for the view graph, if you'd like this amendment to be discussed.
Okay. The motion is that the total, the override budget for SPS schools be capped at the $34,654,472. No, SPS.
Hang on. Sir, please, let him. So where's this $34 million appear?
If you look
on the
right,
third line?
Right there.
$34,654?
Correct.
No.
Yeah, it's the third column from the left.
No, sir. Town Council advises that that's not a legal amendment. You have to choose line item 300, one of those three.
Anybody got a calculator?
Sir, why don't you sit? We're going to go on to someone else. Okay? We got to move this along.
I propose that we amend the Sudbury Public Schools net.
Okay.
To 27,000,000.
Okay. Very good. Can you put that? Does it receive a second?
And the reason? The reason is reduction in.
No, sir. Okay. Does it receive a second? It does. Go ahead, sir. So it's to change item 300, Sudbury Public Schools net. If you could do, Mark, Mark, can you be doing this while we're talking? To correct me if I'm wrong, to change $28,762,956 and reduce it to, is it $27
million? Yes, $27
okay.
million.
Thank you. Sir, why do you want to do that?
From the information that was provided earlier in the evening, the Sudbury school system has experienced a reduction in the number of students.
Okay.
And therefore, I think that that reduction should be passed on to the taxpayers in a lower cost per student, or actually a level cost per student. So that would approximate that kind of change.
Thank you very much. Anybody wish to be heard in favor or against the amendment? I see none. All those in favor of the amendment signify by raising your cards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed, a lot more than 7. It fails. So we're by 300 Sudbury Public Schools net. The next one is 300 SPS employee benefits. Is there a question or a motion to amend? I see none. The next line item is SPS health insurance reserve. Correct. Anyone have a motion to amend or a question? I see none. The next one is LS operating assessment net. Anybody have a motion to amend or a question? I see none. 300 LS debt assessment. LSEND. Okay. 300 Minuteman Regional Assessment. 300 Other Regional School Assessments. 100 General Government. 200 Public Safety. 400 Public Works. 500 Human Services. 600 Culture and Recreation. 900 Town Employee Benefits. 900 Townwide Operating and Transfer. 1,000 SPS Town Health Insurance Reserve. 700 Town Debt Service. Is that a question on line item 700? Please stand.
Tammy Dufault, 84 Silver Hill Road. The question more so is what's going on with the health insurance reserve, because when we read what's being publicized on the health insurance reform, if you will, that's been recently negotiated, I'm just not seeing the numbers within the budget. So I guess it's a general question. Where do we see the development in the health care savings on these line items?
Yes, town manager.
Those aren't in the FY11 budget at all. You see zeros there. Those are FY10, which isn't the article here at this point.
But what was reported, as an example, was $4 million for SPS over 3 years. So one would think that we would see that development year over year. However, just as an example, because this is certainly not pointing out SPS, what we see year over year is a $250,000 reduction from FY09 and a $70,000 increase FY10 to FY11. I can't reconcile a $4 million savings there, or a portion of it over a three-year contract.
I think the $4 million was talking about the combination of salaries and benefits over, we're talking about SPS now, over a three-year period. It doesn't show up here because they don't have to spend it.
So then my question, and Chuck, you and I, you know we've had a couple of exchanges here on this. My question is then, if you add up the health care year over year, who can explain to us how much money was saved? Because what was reported was a 1.1% increase, which I think is not, I don't think anybody's health insurance is increasing 1% year over year.
But I think your question is how much are the health insurance savings at SPS in fiscal year 11 compared to where they would have been without the new contract, and I guess I'll have someone from SBS answer that question.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? Okay. Are we ready for a vote?
Excuse me, Mr. Moderator. Does that mean I'm not going to get an answer?
I'm sorry. What was your question?
Where can we see the savings for the health care? I guess I just missed what just occurred here.
Okay.
Thanks, Susan.
We were trying to figure out how to...
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you so much.
Susan Giuliano, I'm chair of the Sudbury School Committee. The question raises a variety of issues. One that Mr. Woodard has touched on is that the projected savings amount of the $4.1 million is compared to previous projections, compared to the status quo based on prior contracts and prior growth. So that is a number that has been reduced compared to prior budget increases. Secondly, we had particular cost savings in the plans and the percentages that the employees are paying that has been incorporated into this, meaning that the number is lower. The costs of health care are still increasing, but that number isn't going up as high in the FY11 line item for SPS or the town because we aren't paying, we have a plan that's not as costly and the town is not paying as much of it. So it doesn't mean that dollar per dollar we're paying less than we paid last year, but that we've had significant savings compared to how those overall increases in health insurance would have affected our budget for FY11. There may be other details. Is there anything else we should add to that? I guess not. So,
thank you.
Okay.
Okay. We're through all the line items, so we're now going to vote on the main motion. We see that on the screen, and we're voting on the override budget numbers. So all those in favor of the motion that was read by the Finance Committee and the numbers that are shown on the screen, all those who are in favor, raise your cards. All those opposed, there's about a dozen or so opposed. It requires a majority. It's way more than a majority. It passes. Now we're going to go to the Finance Committee. Who was making the limiting motion last time? Mr. Woodard? We're all set with that?
Move that the amount appropriated under the FY11 non-override budget not exceed the sum of $77,537,218.
Does that receive a second? It does. Can we get that back on the screen? Do you have that?
The one that says 77 million five, was it 537.18? Jim? Is it 77,537,218?
Yes.
Can you put that one? Okay. You see it on the view graph. This is the non-override limiting motion. Okay? Okay. Town Council has opined that the limiting motion on the non-override budget is unnecessary because of the language we already voted on the limiting override budget. That language said that in case the override doesn't pass at the ballot, in effect, it reverts to the non-override numbers. So that's considered. So I will ask the Finance Committee, since it did not receive a second, to see if they want to withdraw that motion. And the answer is yes, that motion is withdrawn. So to satisfy this gentleman, what we're going to do now is talk about the non-override budget and ask you what you'd like to do in an amendment should the ballot question fail. Can we get a mic over to this gentleman on the side here? We got a all the way over there. Patty, do we have a second mic down here? Just switch it. Go ahead, talk into it.
So am I amending an existing motion? What am I amending, first of all?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Okay. Well, usually there has to be something on the floor. I guess
take a look at the non-override numbers in the third column
and
tell us what you'd like to do in amendment form.
It's a different procedure than the past, so I'm just trying to understand what we're doing here. Motion to reduce LS operating assessment net by $398,000 and increase the Sudbury Public School operating assessment net by $398,000.
So you're reducing LS net by $398,000 and you're increasing SPS net by $398,000.
Correct.
Okay. And you wish to make this should the override fail, because if the override passes, this is not going to be in effect.
That's correct. If the override passes, there's no reason to offer amendments. But if it doesn't, there may be other amendments people would rather offer under a non-override situation.
Can I have your name and address for the record, please?
Mike Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive.
Withdrawing that motion, once we have an amendment that is in legal form, we'll ask for a second, then we'll discuss it, and we'll vote on it. In case anyone is interested, the bylaw says we can't go past 10:30 except to finish the article that we're on, and we're trying to finish the article we're on. Chuck and AV, can you just tell us what time these lights go out? Can you talk to anyone? Because it's going to be 11 soon. A motion, you tell me whether you want to adopt it or not. I move in the event that the override ballot fails at a special town election, to reduce the amount in LS net by $398,000 and to increase the amount under SPS net by $398,000. You wish to adopt that?
Yes.
Great. Is there a second? Yes, I see a second. Okay, it seems pretty obvious what you'd like to do. Anybody else wish to be heard before we vote on it?
Yes.
Yes, Finance Committee.
Just a little bit of history, and I think Bill Keller alluded to it earlier, but years ago we often had difficulty as a town coming together on a rational decision for a budget, and in fact frequently the final budget decisions were hashed out on town meeting floor. And I think at the time, people finally concluded that this was not a great way to figure out what is the best method to allocate scarce resources, and these are scarce resources, to each of these cost centers. So what came out of this was what we call the working group, and the working group is basically an informal group of each of the two school superintendents, a few school committees, members from each of the schools, the town manager, one of the selectmen, and a few people from the finance committee. And this group spends a lot of time together looking at the limited amount of money the town has to spend to come up with a recommendation on how to allocate the dollars. And that recommendation is, at the end of the day, a recommendation agreed to by all three cost centers, including both school systems. And we strongly recommend that you stay with what we've recommended here in terms of how to allocate the limited budget dollars available. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Have to be recognized. Can't shout. So you have a speaker before you. Yes, sir.
Just a quick little bit on how this would impact LS. So when we cut $389,000 from the or $398,000 from the LS budget, when we cut it from Sudbury, because it's a regional school system, we also have to cut money from the Lincoln side of this. So the actual cut for the LS budget becomes a $471,787 cut, which ends up being another 7.81 teachers above and beyond the 3.7 staff members or teachers that were cut before. So basically this ends up being an 11 teacher plus cut at the high school in the case of this motion. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? Hang on. Yes. Name, address, and position.
Okay. Address. Susan Giuliano, 22 Jason Drive, Sudbury School Committee. The Sudbury School Committee opposes the motion. We support the process described by Mr. Woodard of the cost centers, the two school committees and the town and the finance committee all working together and support the proposed budget that the finance committee has put forth for both the non-override and override levels. And it, within the context of that process, we've certainly addressed and discussed relative need and looked at the needs from a K-12 perspective. We've looked at factors such as enrollment shift and other needs in arriving at this proposed budget.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard about for the amendment? Yes, ma'am.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I would just like to ask if those meetings by representatives of those committees are subject to open meeting law, or if they're open, or are there minutes taken, or...
Hang on. Thank you.
Town Council will answer your question as to whether or not it's a group that's subject to the public meeting law. That was the question? And so is this group subject to the public meeting law?
Moderator, based upon the information that I have, this is a working group that has people joined together to not for the purposes set forth in the open meeting law and would not be subject to the open meeting law.
The answer is no. Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? And by the way, the question on the floor is should we take 398 from LS and give it to SBS? So I'm not going to entertain questions unrelated to that. Anybody else? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment signify by raising your cards. One, two. That wraps it up. Did I miss anyone up there? Nope. Two. All those in against the amendment signify by raising your cards. It's everybody but two. The amendment is defeated. Does anybody else wish to make any amendments on the non-override budget? I see none. So we already voted the limiting motion on the override, and we just voted the main motion on the override. So we're all set? Okay. There's nothing in front of this town meeting right now, sir. Yes? We could, but at a later date, that would be great. Hang on 1 second, please, before you leave. Mr. Kelly, just as to remind everybody, please, you were kind enough to come tonight. Please come tomorrow night at 7:30. We're going to start with a special town meeting with one article to decide whether or not to grant some money to Minuteman Regional for a feasibility study on building. And then we'll immediately go into our annual town meeting after that. So, Mr. Keller, do I have a motion to adjourn the session of the annual town meeting until tomorrow, immediately following the special town meeting at 7:30 p.m.? So moved. Is there a second? There is. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than a majority. Thank you so much. Good night.